Most organizational change efforts take longer and cost more money than leaders and managers anticipate. In fact, research from McKinsey and Company show that 70% of all transformations fail. Most change efforts fail because they do not produce the hoped-for results, and failed change efforts lead to cynicism and resistance. But is it really that clear-cut? And why some successful organizational change efforts can begin to spin wheels and fizzle out anyway? Why do organizations fail to follow through, and is it really a failure on their behalf? My name is Tom Galvin, and these are my reflections on management. Some time ago, I was involved in an organization that was undergoing a change effort. Let's just say that. And this was a typical military organization, a command. And just to kind of be a little bit vague about it, the aim of the effort was to improve organizational performance, particularly in areas of training and human resources management. So the idea was that a new training regimen was going to be instituted that would improve the readiness of the organization better than it already was. Now, there wasn't a lot of resistance against the change effort. The recognition that performance could be better was understood, pretty well accepted. But there wasn't a lot of enthusiasm for the change effort, because it was thought that perhaps that the new regimen would be a bit excessive, would be too difficult. There was uncertainty in terms of whether it would actually achieve organizational performance. But never mind, the command was highly interested in making this happen, and so there you go. Months of effort went into it to try to come up with a program that could be instituted fairly easily, get some quick wins, if you will, show some short-term organizational performance enhancement, and then would make improvements, learn, and keep moving on. Well, something kind of funny happened along the way. The pilot, as it was called, the pilot program that went through the first training cycle, was very successful. It was deemed very successful by not just the leadership, but also the members of the command who partook in it. There were some performance gains. There were some lessons learned. However, once it was over, there wasn't a whole lot of enthusiasm for going back and actually learning the lessons, upgrading the program, and doing the regiment again better the following year. In essence, when the second year came around, and it was still the same command, same commander, largely the same leadership, although naturally there was a little bit of turnover, basically the program was repeated as is, or as it was. And indeed, there were commensurate results, but it was the sort of the same gain of performance that was from the previous year. That is, it wasn't significantly improved, it was just marginally improved. Those who underwent the regimen the first time knew how to do a little bit better, and there was a little bit better calibration across all of the units that undertook the regimen. But in general, it was all the same mistakes that were repeated. And again, once that was over, there wasn't very much interest in reinvesting the effort to go ahead and improve it for the third year, or the fourth, which was about the time in which I became personally involved in the particular effort in question. And I decided that I wasn't going to just let year four or year five be copy-paste of the previous year, and I pushed to have a reevaluation of this regimen. And ultimately, there was a change. But, oh boy, the resistance I felt was tremendous. And so I looked upon that particular episode, which was fairly recent compared to a lot of my organizational experiences, but it was comparable in a number of instances where I was in an organization in which there was an emphasis on change, but the organization, for whatever reason, decided that after the experiment was done, whether that was a narrow experiment or a much broader experiment that encompassed the entire organization, which would be more like a pilot, that good enough was good enough. And there wasn't a desire to reinvest in it. Significant investment was made in the initial effort, and that was about as much as the organization was willing to put in, despite the efforts of leaders or despite the efforts of middle managers or what have you. So I came to call this, I coined a phrase, I call it anchoring on the pilot. And it sort of raises a question that if you're going to go through the effort to put together a transformational change, would you not expect that the organization should not just invest in the initial effort, but also reinvest in it in order to ensure that the gains of the pilot, what are the short-term wins, should not be basically the first steps of forward momentum, rather than have the change effort stop and you only get a half solution. Now, the change management literature really, I'm not going to say that it's their fault necessarily, but you read it, and one of the most common things that you see is this desire for the quick win or the short-term success. Something that will convince the organization that the effort is worthy, that the goals are achievable. All we have to do is to continue the momentum of the short-term win. And I think that the tendency that I have seen for anchoring on the pilots, it just practically runs counter to that. The short-term win winds up being the long-term win. That's it. We're done. Now, as I thought about this a little bit more, there's a couple of factors that sort of play into this. And I want to offer these as sort of proposed ideas, because obviously anchoring on the pilot seems not to be a very satisfying way of approaching change. If you're going to go through with a transformational change effort, you should see it all the way and you should plan for it all the way and not just stop at the short-term wins. So my first thought is anchoring on the pilot a form of ambivalence, a benevolent form of ambivalence? I can argue, certainly, looking back at the various cases that I've experienced, that was the case. In a way, the organization decided that they weren't really committed to the change effort in the first place, but they were willing to go through it because perhaps they agreed on the problem space. They agreed that something had to be done, but they may not have been totally sure about the validity of the effort and decided that, you know, okay, if we get something out of it, then that's fine. And I can see where in some cases it may be a effort or a situation where the organization really only has finite energy to put to transformational change. And in a couple of cases, I can definitely say that there was demand for hundreds of change efforts. And you could only put so much energy into one, and others might wind up going wanting. So it was, I think in a couple of instances, was a case of, all right, that problem got its turn. Now, we got something out of that. Now we need to move on to a problem that a different member of the organization, a different change agent, is interested in. There you go. Okay. So as a form of ambivalence, it's sort of ambivalence is conflicted feelings. It's you want it, but maybe you want it a different way, or maybe there's a different priority. And so that tends to lead, I think, to an organization saying, well, good enough is good enough. Let's move on to something else, or Let's not worry about investing further into that because we have so many other things we have to invest to. Another is, I think, certainly in the case, in the story in which I opened with, anchoring on the pilot was the result of just fear of losing the momentum that had already been garnered. Because there was, in that particular case, uncertainty over the outcome of the pilot. And one can say that, if we're talking about transformational change in a complex and difficult situation, there may very well be risk associated with reinvesting in the effort, reinvesting to improve the plan, to move beyond the short-term wins and turn it into a true, deliberate, planned change where the experiment, you know, the gains of the experiment are only just a tiny part of the overall desired outcome. Because especially in complex problems, and I'm relating to, some of the organizational scholars who've written about paradox, like Marianne Lewis. And I think about paradox being part of some of these things that these change efforts face. There is a high risk. Let me give you kind of a direct example. In military organizations, there's almost a dual identity, a very conflicting dual identity between being a public sector organization and its proclivities for efficiency and satisfying the stakeholder and stewardship of taxpayer resources, in opposition of its professional character and professional character in terms of, say, an Andrew Abbott, who writes about professions as being masters of a domain of expert knowledge and valuing effectiveness. This dichotomy or dialectic between public sector bureaucracy and professional organization has been written by a number of military scholars. I'll cite one, Don Snyder, who was with the U.S. Army War College for a very long time and wrote extensively about military professionalism and the conflict with public sector bureaucratic behaviors. So let's say that you have a change problem and just about everything in the military human resources realm, I think, falls into this category where you're conflicted between the efficiency of what would satisfy the public sector public requirements and those that are a little bit more meritocratic there that fall in the professional realm. And that dialectic, yes, you can come up with a synthesis every once in a while. Every once in a while, you may be able to forge a change effort that somehow balances these two. But thinking about what happens in a dialectic change, and I'm hearkening to Van de Ven and Poole, 1995, the motors of change. They argue that if you have a dialectic, then what happens is that the thesis and the antithesis, you forge a synthesis, but that synthesis is unstable. It's naturally unstable. And at some point, the tension that lies between the thesis and the antithesis will cause the synthesis to break. You may be able to realize some sort of a short-term solution. You may be able to sustain that short-term solution for a period of time until conditions change that put pressure on the synthesis ultimately to its breakage. So if we have that as inherent in a lot of large-scale change efforts within a very large organization like a military, well, then, of course, there's not a lot of emphasis or you can see that as being somewhat discouraging of reinvesting in a change effort after the initial win because it probably took a lot of effort to build that initial synthesis. And the act of seeking reinvestment may be sufficient to break that synthesis and kick you back to square one. So why would you? Why would you do that? I think that's a legitimate question. And I think that that was at play in a couple of these, change efforts that I said that I witnessed. I think some of the implications of this It's definitely immensely or potentially immensely frustrating for a change effort or for a change agent, I should say, because we look at a change and what are we looking at? We're looking at the prospect of a big problem that requires realistically a sustained, long-term, well-planned, deliberate effort to get from here to the desired end state, the vision. And you know going in that the organization may tolerate, may accept that you have to start down the path, but will only go for a half measure and then decide good enough is good enough. And you, as the change agent, are left with a huge delta between what you know that the organization really needs and what you can realistically accomplish. So I guess the question kind of comes, do we really understand enough about the risks of anchoring on the pilot? Do we understand, or is it really necessarily bad, for instance, if the organization has to balance between its finite resources and finite time, and knowing that the potential number of problems that a large organization must solve, probably has to solve, in a competitive and dynamic environment where conditions are changing, is good enough, simply good enough? And so then instead of, you know, looking at success of a change effort as being the full accomplishment of a goal, is it something short of that? Is it really something that just we simply put the effort in that we know where we can accomplish something and hope that the accomplishment itself allows the organization to believe that it can change and can change in a fashion that it desires? And so instead of looking at the overall intended change effort as a failure, the process of learning really becomes the goal. That's kind of what I'm left with. Again, as a change agent, may not be satisfying, but you got to do what you got to do. And that's all for now. The views expressed are my own and do not necessarily reflect those of the United States Army War College, the United States Army, or the Department of Defense. Thank you for listening and have a great day.